Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out.
Welcome to New Books in Children's Literature. I'm host Susan Robb, and today we're talking with author Michelle Markell about two books, Brave Girl, Clara and the Shirtwaist Makers Strike of 1909, which is illustrated by Melissa Sweet, and Hillary Rodham Clinton, Some Girls Are Born to Lead, illustrated by Luyan Pham. Both of the books are picture books or books published by Balzer and Bray. So the first book that we're talking about is the book on Clara Lemlich, who is an immigrant. She led the largest strike, which was a walkout of women workers in U.S. history. And the second is, of course, about Hillary Rodham Clinton, who we all know lots about. But this talks about her background and some of how she got to be the person who we know in the news. So first, Michelle, thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Now, we're talking here about two women, one born in 1886 and the other born in 1947, so 60 years apart. What qualities do you see in each of them that made them persevere?
Well, these were both two women who believed in themselves and who were very feisty and unintimidated by males. So I'd say that's probably the biggest thing. And who also believed in that women were equally talented and gifted and smart as men.
And how different was it for a woman in Clara's time to be thinking that? What was her world like?
Well, that was a much different time. And you had, if we want to talk about the immigrant women in New York City during the turn of the century, they were exploited as workers in the factories and paid a lot less than men. So you had the huge wage difference, and who were treated very shabbily, who didn't have good working conditions, and I'm just going to have to use that word exploitation again. So our workplace, in terms of women in the workplace, things have changed considerably, although there still are. As you probably know, there still are garment factories overseas that have bad conditions like this. But the early 1900s was a time when women still hadn't gotten the right to vote yet. So it's that progressive era, and a lot of women are getting more active, and we're just like on the brink of a new era when they get the vote in 1920. So this book takes place before that, but there is that progressive feeling in the air that it's time for things to change.
And Clara's story is also an immigrant story, so I wondered how unlikely would it have been for Clara to become an activist at that time?
Well, there were a lot of immigrants in New York City, and a lot of them were involved in the trade union movement. So it was very likely. Trade unionism was in the air, and a lot of immigrants learned about labor movements in the old country. So it was in the air, and that's how she found out about it. And so it was not untypical at all, but what was not typical was for the women to be involved. It was mostly men, and the men in the labor movement didn't think that girls had the strength and wherewithal to endure a strike and do all that would be necessary to, you know, to be active in the movement. So that's what was unusual.
Were there things about the shirtwaist makers strike itself that you found surprising when you were doing your research?
What I found surprising was the cruelty of the courts and how these women, I mean, it was astounding to me, the level of cruelty and viciousness, how these women were treated, the strikers, and thrown into the wagon. And some of these details are in the book, the thugs that were hired by the factory owners to beat them up, that there was just, I mean, it didn't matter that they were women, that they're human beings, and they were treated so horribly. And then once they were brought before the judges, some of them were sentenced to the poorhouse, young girls. It was just, that astounded me.
So was that worse, do you think, because they were women?
Is it worse because they were women? I don't know. I mean, I really don't know enough about how the whole, you know, the prison system and the court system worked at that time. But definitely they were a big, the courts and the political establishment was on the side of the factory owners and of business. So these women were threatening.
Then what about this story as a whole? What originally prompted you to write it?
Well, I knew that there was a dearth of labor stories out there for kids, and everyone's got moms and dads or caregivers that work. It's just a huge part of our life, work, and it's something that we don't really talk about that much, the rights of workers. And I wanted to write a book about a strong woman. I had written about an artist, Marc Chagall, before, and I'd written about Henri Rousseau, another artist, but it was time to write about a strong woman. And my husband, who's an anthropologist, actually pointed me in the direction of the garment workers, and that's when I did the research. I was so impressed and inspired by these stories, and I thought kids need to know about this heroism and dedication, and how we can change if we work together collectively. How change can happen in this country, and it can be more fair.
Do you think kids find it hard to picture what life was like that? You know, back then?
I think I tried to give them a sense of what it was like by using all of the details, which I was able to do because Clara was a writer and was able to, she wrote for Good Housekeeping and some other publications and described in detail what it was like to be in those factories, which was, it really enabled me to paint a picture in a really descriptive way, and I think it helps kids understand what that was like, about pricking their, you know, if you prick your finger on the needle and it bleeds on the cloth, you're fired. I mean, that is like so vivid. So I think the book does help give them, you know, take them into that world, and I think Melissa's illustrations with the texture and the fabric, I think it is very evocative of that time period.
Yeah, no, it is. It's really unusual and really beautifully, beautifully done. What kinds of responses have you gotten on this from women and girls or anybody? Sorry about that.
I've heard that they're up from a lot of teachers and educators that they were waiting for a book like this to come along, that this issue of labor and human rights and women's rights and workers' rights. They're also important. And for kids to think about that, you know, as a society, we need to care about others, and we should all, you know, we should all have the equal rights to, you know, to be paid the same and be treated respectfully, and in this country, and what the country stands for, and in the world too, you know, human rights around the world. There's some basic rights and dignities that we all deserve.
Now, it was interesting in talking about coming, you know, where a book comes from, the Hillary Rodham Clinton book, which is a picture book, the pub date was January of 2016, which seems so long ago. But you've said that it was acquired in 2014 and that you both had fast turnaround requested from the publisher, and that at that time, Hillary had barely declared. So was she someone that you had thought separately about writing about, or was this something that came just directly because the publisher wanted to have you do this?
Well, I was interested in writing another book about a strong woman because I realized after writing the book about Clara and looking into these Women's History Month publications and looking more at children's literature and what books had already been published, that there was a huge hole and vacuum here for books on leaders who were women. And I thought Hillary would be a good idea. The publisher was very interested. It was a mutual. We had a discussion about this, and I did some research, some initial research for a couple of weeks, and I said, yes, let's do this.
And were there other things particularly challenging about writing this book?
This book was very challenging because of the short turnaround and because there was so much information. There has been so much written about Hillary, books about her and Bill, books about you know, the time period when they were in an office or when Bill was president, and also books about how she has been treated because she's a woman who has wanted to lead. So from a feminist angle, and the articles that were written about criticizing her when she was first lady. So there's just articles, books, interviews, footage. There was so much information. So the challenge was the focus, what goes into the book. And picture books are brief, and they have themes, and so you can't. They're really introductions for children, so they can have an angle. They're introductions, but they're not meant to be comprehensive biography. So you have to be selective, and that was very difficult to sift through all the information that I had.
What about the illustration? Did you have in your mind as you were writing it a notion of what you imagined illustration might look like?
I was delighted with this illustration. When I had originally spoken to the editor, she said that traditionally books about contemporary figures are realistic and often hyper-realistic. It's sort of, it's a tradition. So when I saw this, it was much, I think Luyen's illustrations are very dynamic and lively and colorful. I mean, it was really what I had in my mind. Because when I'm writing, I'm seeing these historical figures as characters. And so she totally captured that. I was thrilled. And I think she brought so much extra to it with what she did with women around the world, her illustrations of the women's rights picture with all the faces of those women who are all identified in the back matter, and the last picture in the book that has the successful women from around the world. I think she just added so much.
So that's a really interesting thing. So when you were writing this, were you actually thinking of her both as, you know, what I'm wondering is, was the real, you know, real life Hillary going on in your head while the character that you were writing about, did you really think of her as an entity you created in a certain way that you were taking on a story?
I think it's just how I operate. I mean, she becomes a character. This is a story. It's literature. So that's how it works for me anyway. I'm seeing her doing these things as I'm reading about them in a sort of miniature way that's going to be in the picture book.
That's fascinating. Is it, was it hard to make that transition, or did it happen pretty quickly?
I think once I started writing, once I get in front of the computer and start typing, that's when it happens. Because I'm visualizing the pages as a picture book writer. That's something that I do. And I'm thinking about the different scenes. I'm picturing her in scenes.
That's fascinating. It's interesting. All right, let me talk some about the story. So you see Hillary here upstaging some of the boys in class. You talk about her raising money for the poor through sports events. What were qualities that you learned about in your research that you wanted to make sure to bring out?
Well, she seemed to really enjoy doing good for others from a very young age. She took pleasure from it. I mean, she was encouraged to do this, but she enjoyed it. And she enjoyed, and I could relate to this, she enjoyed doing well in class. She took pleasure from getting those A's. I mean, I have to confess, I was an A student, so I mean, I could relate to that, you know, just taking, and even doing better than some of the boys. She was encouraged by her mother to be independent. Her father was very strict, but he also, I think he encouraged her to be tough. So those were two qualities that really served her well: be independent, be tough, and do good. And she was good at all those things.
Now, you also reference that her mother told her to aim high. Are there other examples of women she admired?
She admired Margaret Chase Smith, and that's the one that I remember from the research. She wanted to be an astronaut when she was young, even though that was not something that was that wasn't done in those days.
Right. So another career that was virtually would have been conceived of as impossible for a woman, right?
Right, right.
Now, another aspect of her life that you bring out is how she was a leader from early on. And you talk about her as a student body president in college. What about that caught your attention?
Well, she went to a prestigious East Coast school, Wellesley, and she was really a little bit out of her element there. A lot of the girls were from the East Coast. She wasn't. But that didn't seem to intimidate her, the fact that she was kind of a bit of an outsider. It didn't intimidate her at all, and she just was interested in leading. She just took enjoyment out of getting up there and helping and contributing.
Do you think some of
wasn't faced by her, her difference in her slightly different middle class.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this would have been something that came out in what you were looking at, but do you think some of what she was pursuing, even in college or before, were things that girls didn't usually gravitate toward?
Absolutely. In those days, even though it was women were encouraged to be educated and refined, after graduation, it was assumed that they would find and this, of course, is a generalization, but that they would find a husband at one of the other prestigious East Coast schools and settle down. They were not encouraged to pursue professions. They were encouraged to be literate, cultured wives.
And then in her case, she goes on to become a student body college president, goes to law school, similar to someone like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, at a time when most lawyers were men, and it was not easy for women to find a place in law, right?
Absolutely. Only 10% of the law schools were women in those days. And a lot of Ivy League schools hadn't been admitting women either. Most of them didn't.
So
in those days, it's just hard to believe that now, but that's the case, because this culture wasn't encouraging women to go on and become professionals.
So what did you find about her as a lawyer? What kinds of things did you come across?
As a lawyer or as a law student? Well, what I read about, one of the articles I read described her in action when she did these mock trials, and how not stereotypically feminine she was, that she got up there and she was so forceful and comparable to what a man would do. And a male lawyer was describing how astounded he was, because she didn't have any of these, like female mannerisms, how you're supposed to behave, body language, and just her tone of voice. You can see that now, too, when her cool delivery, I think. She's just so cool, calm, and collected
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
when she speaks.
Which is interesting because one of the things you talk about before her becoming a lawyer, you know, during summer breaks, that she went and worked with migrant farmers, and that one of the things you allude to is her being called fearless. And certainly a particular thing about her has been she's faced unbelievable amounts of criticism, like her or don't like her. She certainly has been someone who has been in the crosshairs of people with a lot of, you know, comments and criticism of her as a woman, as a political figure, whatever. But there is something where you bring yourself into this kind of limelight and you have to be extremely tough to deal with that. What were some of the things that you saw in her as you talked about her that maybe would contribute? What does it mean to become someone who is fearless?
Well, just to talk a little bit about the going up and down the dangerous blocks in Texas, those were neighborhoods. They were poor neighborhoods, and as you know, some, not all neighborhoods, but there is crime in some of these neighborhoods. And for a white, young white woman to go in there and be talking to voters was considered a little bit a brave thing to do. It's not something that very many women were doing in those days. So that's just, and it, but it didn't matter to her. She went with one of the union leaders to some, you know, very, what's the word? Just some sort of dicey areas. But she enjoyed herself, and it's what she wanted to do. But what you were also talking about, just her attitudes when. Mm-hmm. In terms of being having to stand up to the press and things like that,
right?
Well, I think I remember her reading about, you know, just bring it on. She would just think, okay, just bring it on when they started to be critical of her, and she would just steel her nerves because she knew what was coming, and it just didn't matter to her. You know, what mattered were her goals and not the obstacles that people were putting in front of her.
And maybe part of that is from the kinds of things that you've talked about her doing at a young age. I'm sure she met with criticism then too. And then, you know, in looking back on that, I guess you can look and say, yes, I know what was happening then, but I stood firm on this and this is how that turned out.
Yes. And again, you know, her mother encouraged her to stand up to bullies, which of course is serving her well. It has served her well over the years.
Now, what about ambition? Because that's always a tricky one. You know, what does it mean to be ambitious? And I expect that for a lot of people, you know, when they think about ambition in a man and ambition in a woman, that's still sometimes seen differently.
Yes. Why is it that ambition is supposed to be a negative for a woman, but not for a man? I mean, it's two different standards, and I think she thinks it's ridiculous, and we all should think it's ridiculous. And I think that, you know, the message of this book is that anyone should have ambitions and be, regardless of their race or gender or anything else, everyone should be able to realize their dreams. Hopefully those are good ambitions. Ambitions to be productive members of society, to realize your gifts, you know, whatever those things are. In her case, it was politics and wanting to make the world a better place. What I think we wouldn't want to deny that to anybody.
Now, do you think as she was pursuing these different things, did you get a sense that she had a down the road focus of where she was heading, and which I'm sure everybody, you have to, but did you also find some things that led her in areas serendipitously that proved to be a big part of her story?
Well, I've read from a lot of sources that people expected her to go into politics pretty early. And there were several of her friends were disappointed when she decided to move to Arkansas and be the you know, play second fiddle to what Bill was doing there to his political career there. So I think there was, I don't know for sure, and I haven't read at what point she ever thought she might want to run for president someday, but certainly she had aspirations to serve in high places. And I think that probably came pretty young. I don't think she would have ever put a, this is just my gut feeling. I don't think she put a, any kind of limit on how far she could go because she was a woman. I think she just knew she wanted to be doing good and however far she could get, she would try.
And like someone like Ruth Bader Ginsburg factored into all of that was going on in her life was balancing that with, you know, her role as a mother, right?
Yes. Yes. And she was a very devoted mother. But it was difficult, as I have in the book, when Hillary was a new breed, a superwoman, and she running out of the courtroom to call the babysitter about her sick child. I mean, it was challenging. And I think a lot of women can relate to what a lot of women related to her then. A lot of professional women. She was a real role model to them because of what she was going through, trying to do it all.
Now, one of the things that Hillary Clinton has talked about and is known for is that statement that women's rights are human rights. I guess you could say that about both her and Clara probably, I would imagine, might have felt the same. With Hillary Clinton, she, you know, keeps butting up against the status quo. So can you talk some more about how she represents change over time, like the pivotal things that you saw where she represents that?
Well, I think this book really shows what women of her age have had to go through over the different decades, beginning with, you know, the 60s when the women's movement started and, you know, her college years and the protests when the women's movement was getting off the ground and, you know, fighting, you know, getting into law school when it was difficult. And then the superwoman trying to do it all when she did get her law degree and became a lawyer and all these firsts that she accomplished, you know, the first woman in the law firm and the first woman in her graduating class to, you know, to give a speech. So it's a good historical tour of women's history, you know, modern women's history. Hmm. And that's really what I wanted to show, not just what her life was about, but what was going on for women. And a lot of kids have never heard about this before, especially elementary age kids. So I think this is a really good introduction to them for what women have had to go through. And they're surprised, I think, by the opposition that she faced, that there was, because they just take it for granted, you know, they take it for granted that women are lawyers now and women are doctors. Maybe the doctor they see, you know, is female. They're the vets. There's so many women professionals, but it's been hard fought. And it's good for them to know that change doesn't happen overnight. And there's people that have paved the way for us, people like Hillary.
Yeah. And so,
yes.
Yeah, no, I was thinking, too, as you were talking, that certainly, you know, people can find, you know, change challenging and upsetting. And you talk about different opposition that she was facing and the kids might not be familiar with that. One thing I wondered, too, is were there times where you saw that she froze up?
Were there times when she froze up? I think there were a few difficult interviews, but overall there were way more times when she just soldiered on. I mean, her big obstacle when she was, well, the obstacle in terms of her wanting to accomplish something when she was first lady was the health plan. And how she bounced back from that her big health care plan and how much opposition there was. And she was devastated when that didn't go through. It was, you want to talk about ambitious, it was a very ambitious health care plan. And it was hard for her to bounce back from that. So I'd say that was one of her, you know, she froze up and was inactive for a while there. But then she picked herself up and dusted herself off and soldiered on, as we know. She went to she did her international visits and went on to do some other great things. So that was sort of one of the low points.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that's one of the areas where, you know, it traces back in her background to all of her advocacy for children and all of that. It's interesting that, you know, that's one of those times where you can kind of see all the pieces of who you've been come together.
Yes, absolutely.
In the campaign, she's walked a fine line focusing on, you know, the historic nature of her run as a woman. So how do you view that? Do you have thoughts on maybe why she chose to handle it this way?
I think there was a little bit more of that in the earlier when she was seeking the nomination last time. And I think that she read a lot about, I'm assuming her and her staff read a lot about what they could have done to improve the campaign the second time around. So I think she hasn't been focusing on it that much, but it's come up because in this campaign there's been discussion about how men treat women and the respect that women deserve and such things. So it's come to the forefront now at this point in the election where we're talking about women's issues and women being treated respectfully and having equal rights to respect in to pursue equal chances at, you know, becoming professionals and going to the very top and becoming president.
And what are your thoughts in... go ahead, sorry.
My thoughts about that is that this could be such a wonderful, inspirational moment for so many young people. And I think that grandmothers and mothers have been... have really embraced this book because they want their daughters to be empowered and they want their sons to learn about what women can do, what girls can do, that we're all equals. And it could just be a groundbreaking moment because if you can be president, you could be anything. I mean, that's considered, that's the ultimate job, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So she would just be taking so many people with her, you know, it would just be a wonderful thing for girls and for women.
What
she knows that.
Yeah. Now, and what are your hopes with kids who come to know her story and Clara's story through your books in terms of human rights and women's rights and examples that people like this set?
Well, again, I think that both books show that women are equally capable as men and they should be treated equally, that if they have any kind of aspirations, there should be no obstacles put in front of them. And that I think everyone has a right to realize their gifts, whatever they are, right? We all want to, that's just like one of the most wonderful things that can happen in your life. If you have talents to be able to use them. And I mean, what a rewarding thing that is. And also, I would like them to take away the idea of working to better your community and how that can be a rewarding thing, the idea of civic virtue, that not just that it's an obligation, that we should be responsible for each other, and if someone else is hurting, we should take steps to help them out, but also that it can just be a wonderful thing. It brings you closer. You know, we're all part of the same fabric, right? And it brings you closer to other people when you're helping them out. So a sense of social conscience and caring. I mean, we want our kids not just to be knowledgeable and to learn about math and writing, but also to be good people, good, caring, responsible people. So I think both of these books show good, inspiring role models.
One of the things I wanted to ask you before we close is about your work, how you've chosen the books that you've chosen in the past and where you're headed.
Well, I seem to like to write about people who persevere despite a lot of challenges, people who believe in themselves. My book's about Rousseau and Chagall, the artists. Those are some themes in those books, really strong themes. And people who go up against some sort of establishment, the art establishment, the political establishment, the business establishment, people who are unafraid to tackle those things and to make it better for the rest of us. And show that it takes time, but you can achieve what you want to achieve. Nothing happens overnight, but it's worthwhile, and it's a wonderful thing. So those are the kind of stories I would say that attract me.
And what are you thinking going forward? What kinds of topics do you want to cover, or are you working on?
Well, right now I am a work in progress. I've got some books about Eleanor Roosevelt that very much tie into this idea of the responsibility of being a citizen and human rights. I'm working on those right now, so I don't want to talk too much about them because things can change, but the books are going to tie in very much to this. One of them, actually, I can speak a little bit about. It's a modernized version of her book that was published in 1932 called When You Grow Up to Vote. So I'm going to be a co-author with Eleanor on a book about government. Yeah, so that's been very interesting researching all the changes that have occurred since 1932. It's been very interesting. One of the chapters that had the most changes so far is the presidential cabinet, interestingly enough. But anyway, those are books that I'm writing, but my next book that's going to be published is very different than the books we discussed today. It's called Balderdash, John Newbery and the Boisterous Birth of Children's Books, and it's about the man that the Newbery Award, I'm sorry, is named after, and it's a very lighthearted, humorous book. So the tone of these books we talked about today are very earnest books, but this book actually, the Newbery book, is humorous, lighthearted, and fun.
That is really fun. When's that coming out?
That is coming out in April, and I'm really hoping that it brings kids to the 1700s and gives them a sense of what it was like for children in those days, how grown-ups view children and the types of books that they thought it was appropriate for them to read, which were very preachy, moralizing books that were not fun at all. And then John Newbery comes along and establishes children's literature and introduces all this playfulness and cheer. And it's just a really fun book. Very different.
And where can people find out more about that, with your website?
They can find out about that book. My website is www.michellemarkell.com.
Terrific. So, well, we'll see how all of this goes. But certainly the books that you've been working on are, you know, both important and in the second case, potentially prescient. And I appreciate you talking with me.
Thank you so much for having me, Susan. It's been a pleasure.